Just before we start the podcast, here's a message from our sponsor, F1 Delta Time. F1 Delta Time is the officially licensed Formula One game running on the Ethereum blockchain from Animoca Brands. They've just started to drop their 2020 season NFTs. In the game, you need to buy a car, and then you can buy various components that you fit to the car, also drivers and various tires. Obviously, you need to put together the right combination for each individual track that you're going to race, and the winners of the leaderboard get various types of crypto, including the in-game cryptocurrency called REV. Check it out now at f1deltatime.com. Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World episode 84. I'm your host, John Jordan, and joining me this week is Andrew Steinwald, who runs the much more professional Zima Red podcast all about the esoteric world of NFTs. How's it going, Andrew?
John, thanks so much for having me. It's going great, and I would not say that I'm more professional. I think you do an incredible job with this podcast, and also your YouTube videos are just phenomenal. So thank you for that compliment.
Okay. Well, I think, I mean, it's interesting. So I kind of thought, you know, you focus much more generally on NFTs this year, and you've done these like really in-depth podcasts. You did one with Prankly that was like two episodes long, about two hours long in total or something. So I thought it might be good to get your perspective from obviously you cover the gaming side as well, but you take a much broader perspective. So how's it gone 2020 for you?
Yeah, no, I mean, this year has just been, I think, completely crazy in a good way for NFTs. And I think we really saw a lot of people that weren't necessarily deeply involved, especially towards the end of the year. Like I'd say like around October, you know, September time, we got a ton of new people, especially from the DeFi arena, that started looking at NFTs and started saying, okay, wow, there's something actually, you know, cool here. And whether it be art or gaming or, you know, collectibles. And that's also one thing that's super great about NFTs is that it's not just one thing. It's like all these different categories and they're all generally fun. You know, it's not like, you know, you're trading some crazy coin and hoping it 100x's or like staking and doing something complicated. It's like, no, I'm going to play a game. I'm going to make some art. I'm going to, you know, talk to some people about my cool collectible card or whatever. Right. So yeah, I think 2020 has just been a totally crazy year. And I think we're gearing up for 2021 here, and it's going to be just 10 times crazier, I think.
So it's interesting. I always like to put some numbers around things. And you actually did a couple of weeks ago, you did a survey around kind of NFTs and what people's views on that were. What was the kind of headline kind of takeaways from that survey you did?
I think the headline takeaway from that survey was basically that, so I had a total of 119 people respond to the survey or kind of fill in their results. It was a 10-question survey, and it was like, you know, how long have you been in the NFT ecosystem? How much have you spent on a single NFT? You know, what category within NFTs is your favorite? Gaming, collectibles, art, etc. Where do you buy and sell? Blah, blah, blah. And I think that the thing that shocked me the most, and I actually wrote this as like the headline of the blog post about this survey, was the amount of money that people are looking to spend in NFTs going into 2021. And there's some stat about like, the average gamer spends, I don't know, I think it was like $20. And this is like traditional video games, right? $20 or like $100 total on a gaming per year or something like that. You know, it's significant, but not like crazy significant. And out of you know, my survey respondents, they're roughly 100, let's call it, those 100 people were looking to spend $1.9 million on NFTs going into 2021. And, you know, I'll caveat that by saying that, like, you know, people that would take the survey are probably really into NFTs, and you know, people that follow me are probably very into NFTs, so they're not like the average user. So that's probably why the results have skewed a little bit like more insanely high for the spend. But I do think it does show that people are willing to spend a lot more into NFTs in general, because there is a chance that you can make money, right? And if anything, maybe you can get out even. Right. So I think that if you're done playing a game, you're like, you know what, I'm done with, you know, NFT, World of Warcraft, or whatever it might be, then you can hopefully sell your assets for what you got them for. And if not, maybe make some money. But, you know, of course, there is a possibility of loss as well. So I just think that you know, power of potentially making money and having some skin in the game is just incredible. And that it shows on the survey results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've always thought that
that is when it comes to the games, we'll kind of cover the other stuff as well, which may be a bit of a different kind of owning mechanic. But for the games, people are happy to spend money on the entertainment because they've done that for 30 years now. So people are kind of happy. But when the education starts happening and people go, potentially they'll start off spending the same amount of money. They're not going to suddenly spend more money in this other sort of gaming. They'll start spending the same money, and then once it twigs, I think, clicks that they can actually resell their stuff. And I always kind of think it's not necessarily the making money thing. Obviously, that's if it does make money, you always get the people who I 10x this sort of thing. But even any, I think that the breakthrough point will be people realize I can spend $50, and then I can get $40 back. And so I, instead of normally spending $50 on a game and getting nothing back, I only spent $10 in reality, and I got this $40 back, and then some of them obviously make $55 or whatever. And I think that will be the breakthrough moment. And I think that exactly what you see in the survey. Obviously, the people who take your survey are self-selecting high NFT kind of people. But they've all, I'm not one of those high-end ones, but I think we've all gone through that process of like when we buy our first NFT, it's kind of like, what's this? What's this? It's a bit weird. Is it secure? What's going to happen with it? And then when you sell your first NFT, you're just like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And then slowly you go from $10 to $50 to $100 to whatever. And I kind of think that's and certainly on the gaming side, that's going to be the trend. It's going to be a different sort of money involved, because it's not going to be the money going straight to the developer and then lost forever. It's going to be like a transactional money. So money's going to go in and out all the time. But I kind of think we'll exactly see people going from gamers who spend $100 a year to gamers having a transactional volume of $1,000 a year.
Totally.
I mean, I think that'll be a very, very straightforward sort of thing. Maybe in a few years' time, maybe 10 years' time, but that will feel very natural to people, and probably feels quite natural already to probably a younger generation who've grown up a bit more online than maybe my generation.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And also, one thing I thought was really interesting was that, because I think in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, a lot of people probably approach the NFT space in terms of like an investing. Like, oh, I want to buy some stuff and make money, right? And that kind of ruins the fun of a lot of gaming. But when I actually did the survey and I saw the results, because I said, like, why do you kind of like, these NFTs? Or, what purpose do you see in them? And the majority of respondents said they want a game. They want to have fun playing some sort of game. And that was the highest, in terms of percentage response was, I collect NFTs and play these NFT games for fun. And that's really, that was really kind of insightful for myself, because I was like, okay, cool. People are not just looking at this as like a money grab. People are actually here to game, which is kind of what it should be. Well, not just game, but gaming and fun. And I think fun's very important. And also the social aspect of it too. That's something that's really interesting. And that kind of definitely connects to fun. But there's a lot of people that responded that, hey, I'm here because, maybe initially I wanted to game and have some fun. But as I get deeper into the rabbit hole, I, discover this community, and I met these great friends, and we can kind of, bond over our shared love of this game or that game or whatever. And so I think it's really cool how you kind of fall into the rabbit hole, and as you get deeper and deeper in the space, then the money becomes almost like a side effect. It's like, I'm not here to make money, but hey, if I make some money, awesome. If I, don't get on my back, that's also a thing too. So I think that's really, really important that we're focused on like the actual use case of his stuff, which is gaming, fun, social.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's always, I think, particularly at the moment, we're so early with the blockchain stuff. There's always this tension because, the blockchain always has money as, an integral part of it. That's clearly something that blockchain, I mean, that's the reason that the blockchain was kind of invented almost, you're building these decentralized formats and they need a way of transferring value around, So it's always in there, but I guess we've kind of seen it on the token side. What happens if that's all you have, then it becomes quite a toxic, horrible environment, and everyone's shouting at each other, and you're not the right coin, and blah blah blah. Whereas if you have that as part of something that has more kind of community anyway, I think that's as I see it for gaming, that you can start building all these other things, identity around stuff. Or I've played loads of games where I've had characters, and then I stop playing the game, and then that character's dead because it was sitting on a server somewhere, but I can't do anything with it. Whereas these characters, you can. Potentially, you just have them in your wallet and kind of show them off. Potentially, someone builds another game that you can put them in. I mean, I think that stuff is a decade down the line. That's a long way off. But I think the potential around this digital ownership, and really, we shouldn't use the term NFTs anymore. Really, I think it's just digital objects. People who love to play games love to have more ownership of their games. Why wouldn't they want to own the things in their games? I mean, that's take away all the tech stuff, that's kind of what it boils down to, really, isn't it?
Yeah, no, 100%. I think like the big revolution here is digital property rights, and that's basically what blockchains are. It's just you can now own your stuff in the digital world. And if you look at like the physical world, no one's gonna walk into my house and like take my computer. They could, but then I could call the police and I could say, hey, I just got this computer taken from me. Can you go catch the bad guy? And then, they would go catch the bad guy, right? And so like, but if for our digital lives, Facebook, Twitter, Zoom, whatever, if the developers or the founders or whatever, if they decide, hey, Andrew, like we're cutting you out. Like you tweeted like screw Mark Zuckerberg and you're out of here. And then they can just do your account and all your stuff in it. Like, let's say I had some digital items in there. That sucks, right? Like that shouldn't be the case. And that really having no property rights in the digital world makes you a little bit hesitant or more hesitant to really want to step in and go like full force. And that's why I think that full force in the sense of just like time, dedication, effort, and money, essentially. And so I think that by having these property rights, people are like, you know what? Oh my gosh, now I can really dive deep and like put my full energy towards something because I know it's not for nothing.
So we've kind of covered off the game stuff. I mean, I guess if people have listened to my podcast before, they probably have an idea of that. Let's go into something a little bit more different for this podcast at least, and where you have a lot of expertise. So you've been talking to a lot of these, particularly these art whales. So names like kind of Pranksy and Whale Shark were not particularly people that I knew 6 months ago, and they've certainly coming to kind of more prominence as the NFT thing has grown. What have you found from talking to those guys? Are they are they very odd individuals who just are singular, or are they just are they showing the same sort of trends as that us mortals are kind of experiencing? We're just getting more into the space.
Yeah, no, really good question. It's interesting because I think people in NFTs, from what I've found, and this can be a whale or like a minnow or whatever you call them. Everyone is very like individualistic, if that makes sense. Like people stand out in my mind, and they can be someone who buys like $100 worth of stuff or someone who buys like $100,000 worth of stuff. And it's interesting, and maybe just because I'm like so in the weeds on this, but I feel like everyone has their own distinct personality in this space. And by talking to each person, you get this really cool story, no matter if they're a whale or not. But I think what you're referring to is probably, I've had Whale Shark on my podcast a couple times. He's always amazing to talk to. And Pranksy, another, massive, whale in the space. He's incredible to talk to. Actually, the Pranksy episode, I had to split up into two parts because it ended up being the first, part was like 2 hours. And then part two was like an hour and a half or something like that. Just because it was just such a wide ranging and crazy, crazy, interesting conversation. And it's by far my most widely listened to conversation because his story is just incredible. I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but I suggest everyone go listen to it. But this is a guy who's like lives and breathes this stuff 24/7, and talking to these type of people that are fanatical about it, it's really on one hand it's inspiring, and on the other hand you're like, whoa, like you can build not necessarily like a business out of this, but you can like build yourself within this growing ecosystem because we're so early. Like for example, Pranksy's like now like in some sense he's like an influencer, He can like tweet and like has a lot of followers and people look up to him. And I like love that. I love that you can make something of yourself in this space. If you were just like kind of like a, I don't want to say a normal person, but just like, do you know what I'm getting at? You can kind of like build a brand and build like your thing. And I think that's really inspiring. But yeah, the Pranksy episode, what would you think about that? I love to hear what your thoughts on that.
I must admit, I haven't listened to it.
Oh man, you got it.
It's terrible, isn't it?
It's crazy good.
The funny thing, I actually first noticed Pranksy when I guess like a lot of us, I started to get into Rarible when that kind of kicked off.
Right.
And I noticed he was just one of the big accounts there. But then I looked back into my history and I realized that at the start of the year, I'd actually bought a CryptoPunk off him. I didn't know who he was then. So it's kind of, he sold it. If I'd actually looked, I would have seen that he doubled his money.
Yeah, of course.
That's how he did it.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, they seem, I guess what's interesting is that I guess there are people in that space who are big collectors who just sit in the sidelines and just kind of like, I'm a collector. And whereas these guys, they're kind of like pseudo anonymous and they kind of they're building a narrative around their collecting. As you say, they all have a story, and it's, I guess some of them it's a bit more formalized. So for Whale Shark, he has his token, doesn't he? His whale token. And that's kind of the idea is the whale token is a, like a share in his NFT portfolio sort of idea, and there's, you know, there's different kind of use cases you can have for that token. The only one of those guys I've spoken to is Meta Kovan, who bought the F1 Delta Time stuff. So that was an interesting podcast. And that was in some ways that was interesting because he came across as very genuine, but equally he did come across as someone who kind of got into the space a little bit accidentally. You know, he I think sometimes we think of these people as being having like much deeper knowledge than anyone else, and that wasn't really the case. He was interested in the space. He'd bought a few things in Decentraland. He'd bought quite a lot of Decentraland land, but he didn't really know a lot about certain projects. He didn't know a lot about F1 Delta Time before he spent 416 ETH on a car. You know, I mean, obviously these people are wealthy. I think he's like a tech entrepreneur. Got the impression. So the money is not the issue for them. It's the interest. You know.
Yeah, I think going off that, I think it's really cool that these people, you know, like everyone in general, like when they find something that they like, they kind of go really deep into it. And I think that that's really cool. And it kind of speaks to like going, I mean, I keep harping on this, but like the property rights thing where like they feel secure. So it's like, hey, I'm spending this money and, you know, maybe I might lose it or whatever, but at least I own this thing. And it's not like at any time they can delete, you know? So I think that goes back to that. And yeah, and also just talking about like Whale Shark, I mean, I think his idea, yeah, and just speaking of innovation in this space more broadly. So Whale Shark, you know, huge NFT collector, right? Like really prolific and just a great person overall. And he decided, hey, you know, I'm going to launch a social token, which is connected to my NFT portfolio. So it's like the Whale Vault, and he holds all his NFTs in there, and like the coins like connected to the vault to, you know, somehow or whatever. And okay, so that's really cool, right? And I think it's great that people are coming up with interesting mechanisms to not promote the space, but just kind of increase their own value and increase other users' value as well. Because, you know, in theory, if you're holding some whale token, it's kind of like, I guess, kind of like a quasi ETF of like NFTs because you have some exposure. And then also talking about Rarible, I mean, talk about good timing. You know, this summer was like all about DeFi, like DeFi, like, you know, governance tokens, all this stuff, and everything's going crazy. And then Rarible, you know, exactly the perfect timing, because they went from a rather small player on the NFT exchange place to one of the more dominant players in a matter of like a few weeks, right? Which is incredible. And they did that all because of their, you know, their RARI governance token, which is basically they rewarded users for trading on their platform. And that was like just a genius move, incredible timing, and it skyrocketed them to the top, you know, one of the top players. So I think that the pace of innovation in NFTs, whether that be like DeFi related stuff or like NFT related stuff, I think it's just incredible, and it's really, really inspiring.
Yeah, no, it is. It was interesting I'm making notes as you were talking there, and I think it's interesting that at the moment, it may not always be the case, but at the moment there's a very synergenic thing. It's not because it's not a zero sum game. It's not like someone sells something for a lot of money and he's like, oh, I've got all this, I did a really good deal there, and some suckers bought my bag, sort of thing. It's, you know, it's very much like
totally.
Obviously, there is some degree of that. You know, for every seller, you need a buyer, and that is obviously different opinions on the value of the asset being bought and sold. But generally, it still seems to be a much more synergetic thing. No one knows what the value of these things is in the long term. But there's buying and selling. Some people kind of want things more than other people do, and so they sell them on. And there's an interesting guy. He was the Nifty wallet who had a lot of CryptoPunks, and he started selling. They started selling some of their CryptoPunks off, and then halfway through they got cold feet and just thought, I think he's going to be worth a lot more. be worth a lot more in a few years' time, and stop selling them. So it's kind of interesting, the whole dynamics of this kind of thing playing off. But
yeah, it's. I always mention that like one thing I love about NFTs is how social they are, and unlike in mainstream crypto, you're not dealing with an order book; you're dealing with a person. And so you have to talk to them. You have to, be friendly. Like, you have to, you know, get to know them. I mean, you don't have to do these things, but it's fun, right? It's like I want to meet people. I want to hear their story. I want to hear why they like, you know, the asset that they're selling or why they're selling it. And there's a lot of human touch to all of this that you just don't experience in traditional crypto. Like traditional crypto is like regular finance, where it's a little bit cold and mathematical. But this is more like, it's just more fun and friendly and like enjoyable all around. So. I just love the aspect, and you talking about that made me think about that.
So has your kind of personal attitude kind of changed? You know, have you started collecting in a different way? How do you interact with NFTs on a, obviously we've got our professional sort of little hats, but has that changed on a more personal level?
I say I'm trying to be more in my NFT collections. I'm trying to be a little bit more. Kind of research driven. You know, I don't really want to go willy nilly because there are so many projects now that I really try to find great projects. I try to talk to the founders, get a feel for them, get a feel for their personality, see what their motivations are, and then really dive into the product itself. Like just getting your hands dirty, using the product, and asking yourself simple questions like, is this fun? Like, am I having an enjoyable time? Right? Because if you are having a fun time in a blockchain based experience, like that's pretty rare. Because most of, using blockchain-based things today is not that great of experience. So, just looking out for that kind of stuff, especially, I also look at like the community, like how does the community interact with newbies? Like, whenever you join a Discord and you say, hey, like you just start asking, the noob questions, saying, hey, like how does this work? And if people respond in a positive manner, you're like, okay, this is a cool community. Like I like these people, but some communities are like, oh, check that. Go read the white paper, or whatever it might be. Like they kind of can respond in like a more little harsher tone, and I think that these factors all like come to play when you're looking at these different projects. And because what's really weird about NFTs is that they're not just like just video games or like just they're not just like this one singular thing where it's almost like a single player game. They're like these community driven and network effect driven businesses and like experiences. So like yeah, sure, I can like go into this game, but if the community sucks, and like the game might be fun, but if the community sucks, then I'm like, oh man, like it's kind of killing the vibe, right? But because everyone kind of has skin in the game in the sense of they purchase these goods to be a part of this game, and they're all kind of playing it together, and there's a Discord and all this stuff, it creates this like great or potential for great like just attitudes and happiness and fun and like social bonding. So. So yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to say, it's interesting for me because I, coming from the gaming side, the game side of things, I it's more like, not like it's not fun, but it's kind of more a work thing. Whereas what happened for me this year was I started collecting, I mean, not a lot at all, but I started like collect a little bit of crypto art, and that was kind of quite an interesting experience because I kind of focused in on one particular kind of artist. But even within that, there were some things that I just, it sounds like a terrible cliche, but some things, you get the thing from Super Rare or whatever, an email saying, oh, there's new art from the artist that you're following sort of thing. And you look at it and immediately you almost go, oh yeah, no, that's what's the price on that one sort of thing. And there's kind of stuff you immediately knew a gut feeling on. And there's a few other things that I bought kind of almost for investment purposes. I was like, oh, that's not, I'm not sure about that one, but the price seems okay. And those kind of ones really rankle now. Yeah, I've really kind of... I'm probably still learning a lot, but I'm still, kind of getting better at working out. It's not really about the price. It's about, obviously the price, it determines what you can buy. But it's, it's kind of like, how much do you like it? And does that attend to the price rather than going, oh, that's really cheap. I don't like it, but I'll buy it because I'll probably sell it later. Which is quite interesting for me. Maybe that's a very facile sort of a kind of attitude. But I was quite surprised by that.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. Like it's really cool because I wasn't into art really before NFTs, which is like weird. And now I have like physical artwork hanging on my walls, which I never thought like I would do that. Because before I was like, oh, art's kind of, it's all not, it's just all like kind of fake is my thought process. But it's funny because now I'm like, digital art was the thing that got me into physical art, right? And yeah, you're absolutely right. Like if you're browsing on Super Rare or Known Origin or any of these art platforms, and you kind of see something that you like, it's great to just be able to buy that thing and kind of have it in your wallet. And I kind of see it as like an Instagram almost. And I always talk about how like I think NFTs are the new Instagram, where because with Instagram you're kind of showcasing your life and you're marketing your life in some sense. You're showing like oh, I traveled here to this amazing place, or I drive this nice car or whatever. You're kind of marketing, right? And but what you're doing is like you're showcasing your personality through pictures, and in some sense, right? And I think that NFTs, and especially art, offer like another way to do so, because like art it's not promising you anything. It's not saying like, hey, you buy this art, you're gonna have the most fun gaming experience of your life, or you're gonna blah blah blah. It's not promising anything, and that's the power of it. It's just like, hey, this is an image or a GIF or whatever. And if you enjoy it, then, you know, happy that you buy it and put it in your wallet, which is like your own gallery. And so I think that you hit the nail on the head when you're talking about like, yeah, you know, I'll be browsing, I'll see something that I love. And yeah, you know, I'll check out the price. And if it's something that I want to pull the trigger on, I'll do it. And I think that's really cool because it's like having people fall down this rabbit hole of like, what is art and like the importance of art and like the cultural significance of art. And speaking of like culture, I think that right now, like this movement that's going on, because it is pretty weird if you think about it, like we're all buying like images on the internet for like hundreds of dollars. I think we're going to look back on this and say, oh my gosh, like that was a really, really like, it was a paradigm shift. It was like a big change in the idea of like, what is art? Because a lot of people say, no, no, art has to be something like physical. Like you can't have digital, like it doesn't count, right? But I think in, you know, 10 years from now, we're going to look back and be like, oh my gosh, that was like the beginning days. And, you know, I can't believe that was going on. Obviously, I'm very biased with my thoughts on that. But I really do think that art is art, like whatever you want. Art is art. And so therefore, why can't art be digital? And I think this is like a huge point in art's history. Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it is in looking back kind of 2020 in terms of NFTs. You know, the game stuff's always been there, and we've had these expensive NFTs on the gaming side, but to a degree that's kind of, I think, programmed in that's going to happen. Whereas the art side seemed to be a more surprising kind of trend that it kind of really blew up. And particularly, I don't know, I mean, you know these guys better than me, but a lot of those kind of whale collectors seem to have come more from the art side than the game side, I think. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I guess there's the land stuff as well. The kind of decentralized land stuff seems to have attracted them on the investment side as well. But they seem to be quite happy spending, you know, six figure sums on digital art. That seems to really float their boat.
Yeah, I think, you know, okay, so this is kind of a broad thesis. Humans are designed to seek status, right? Like ever since we've been in like tribal era, you know, with our stone tools or whatever. We want to be the tribal leader, or we want to be near the tribal leader, or you know, just have a sense of status because that helps you out with survival in the tribe. So I think that there's some like evolutionary design in us that helps us want to seek status, right? And I find that collecting art, you know, is one of the most like effective means of obtaining status. And you can see that with like the physical art world, where you have, you know, billionaire hedge fund managers and all these like, you know, billionaire people collecting these really expensive artworks and trading it amongst themselves. And, you know, if you have like the coolest, hottest artist, that kind of infers some status to yourself. And so I think it's all, and I'm not saying status games are bad by any means. Like, you know, I seek status, right? Like I think it's just like ingrained in us. And I think that NFTs and what we've seen, especially with these whales, you know, spending lots of money on digital art, it's just like a very effective means of achieving that status. Cause like instantly, if you drop, you know, $50,000 on a piece of digital art, people are going to say, oh my gosh, who is that? You know, who bought that? What's going on? And the artists themselves kind of becomes, you know, it looks great for them too, right? Because they just sold this incredible piece of art for $50,000, right? They're super pumped too. So it's like this kind of circle of people helping each other out. I mean, you know, yeah, helping each other out in terms of status, because everyone's happy, everyone's amped, and it increases everyone's status. But also it just like, no one's hurt in the process. Like it's not like because someone purchased that piece of art for that much, like someone else is hurt, you know what I mean? Which is unusual in like when you're trading stuff. So I think it's like I think it's great. I think it's awesome that these people are spending these amounts on art, and I hope it continues. I think it's going to increase actually. And yeah, I think that, you know, in again, 10 years time or something like that, people are going to look back at these art portfolios and be like, oh my gosh, like, you know, they had a, you know, they had a Josie, or they had a Joy, or they had like a Hackatile, like, oh my gosh, like incredible, you know, like so cool. Right. And you know, one of the original people. So I don't know. I think that it could turn out to be an extremely savvy investment move, as well as like a status seeking, you know, kind of thing to do.
Mm. Cool. So we're kind of rounding up now, but we can't really go without, maybe not looking 10 years into the future, but maybe looking at least kind of next year. I mean, for me, not just in the NFT space, more in the blockchain kind of game space, or in the blockchain space in general, I kind of see there's always kind of two likely things, and one is basically we kind of not much happens for a long period of time, and then you get these sudden like explosive kind of launches, and we guess we've had an explosive kind of period in 20 kind of the kind of summer late kind of summer, early autumn sort of thing, we had this kind of explosive situation in terms of kind of this kind of yield farming and there's a lot of these products being launched. And I guess that was as to some degree what was impacted token prices now. Do you think that is such a big deal and has kind of pumped so much value into the kind of ecosystem that we just continue at that higher kind of acceleration rate, or do we have a kind of a more kind of static year because you can't have these big bubbles all the time?
Yeah, no, really, really good question. I'd say overall the market activity in NFTs ebbs and flows for sure. Things are hot suddenly, things are not hot suddenly. So it's kind of like going with the flow of things, going with like the vibe of what people are into at the time. But overall, I would say that, by virtue of my day job, which is like I'm an investor in this space, I get to talk to a ton of really amazing teams. And I know that there are some really, really, really incredible, fun, cool stuff coming out in 2021. And I think it's just going to make it like, we're going to think of 2020 as like 2019. 2019 to me is like ancient history, right? 2020 was like a huge year for NFTs. And I think 2021 is going to be a similar thing where we just keep on growing, keep on expanding. And these incredible teams and projects are continuing to be launched. And I think it's going to be a great year.
Do you think it expands? I guess there's expansion within the kind of current kind of audience, which grows. I mean, like in terms of the games audience, some games like doubled their kind of audience or even tripled their audience in 2020, which is not nothing, but obviously from a very low base. So there's that kind of thing. But then there's this always this kind of like golden dream we have of bringing in the mainstream or whatever we think, whatever, however we define mainstream. But obviously that's like a 1000x sort of thing. Do you think this, at what point do we have that big, that proper kind of hockey stick rocket launch thing when suddenly the kind of the great unwashed who don't know about blockchains suddenly start talking about owning digital goods or things like that? Is that too soon to be 2021, or is that well within the realms of possibility or probability?
Yeah, no, really, really good question. Okay, so I think that 2021 will experience major growth comparative to where we are today, right? Mm-hmm. And I do not think that the space and crypto in general is ready for the Fortnite of NFTs, right? I don't think we're years and years away from that, I think that we're going to experience very significant growth comparatively. When you look at, the NFT markets, let's say there's something like 30,000 active wallets on OpenSea or something like that, right? OpenSea is the number one exchange. You can kind of equate, okay, there's probably around 30 to 40,000 NFT users, you can say. And if you look at active crypto users in the world, there's roughly, 40 to 50 million active crypto users worldwide, right? So if you just look at that market growth that we can expand into, it's something like a 900x or something like that, right? And that's just within crypto. And crypto itself is small. I'm talking about, the mainstream crypto is small compared to like gaming. Roblox has like some insane amount of users, like X amount of millions. And one game has more users than all of crypto, right? So I think that we're years away from the type of mainstream growth that we dream of. But that doesn't mean that we still can't have, these games and things happen today that are not insanely fun, really rewarding, and just you have just a pleasurable experience with them overall.
No, it's a good point, and I guess it's interesting that we have seen kind of the last kind of couple of months, Binance take a lot more active approach when it comes to NFTs, which obviously Binance is the biggest name on the cryptocurrency trading side, that'll be an interesting kind of one to watch, because they would be one of the key bridge points, I guess. To take it.
Yeah, definitely. That was super surprising when I saw that they were investing directly in the NFTs themselves, and also just a really great sign of what's to come. Because if they're doing it in 2020, who's going to do it in 2021, right? So I'm really excited.
Cool. On that positive note, I think we'll leave it. Thank you very much for your expertise, and Andrew, great to have you on.
Yeah, John, thank you so much for this. It's always a pleasure talking to you, and looking forward to our next chat.
Good. Yeah, come back next year, maybe 6 months. We'll see how the predictions are going.
awesome. I'd love to.
And thanks to you, listeners, for listening. We are Blockchain Gaming World. Every week we are talking to the people who are making this incredibly new sector of kind of technology and gaming and mashing it all together. Certainly, I am learning so much every week. I hope you guys are too. Please do subscribe through your usual podcast channel. And if you're feeling very generous, why not give us a review? That's always helpful. But thanks for watching, and come back next time.